Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing. Tom, I love our friends at CBS Network News that precedes our program, top of the hour, but I'm sort of confused about that story. The boss, Bruce Springsteen, found guilty of drinking with friends. You got to wonder if he was... If they were not his friends, would he have been
knocked? And also, they also stipulated that he was in a park. So I wonder if it wasn't in a park, would it have been okay? I don't know.
I don't know. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition, February 24th, 2021. We're in our 11th year here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Our website not only has the podcasts available for you, but an archive that goes back 10 years worth of programs. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. Our contributor on health, Dr. Victoria Mazes, the Andrew Weil Endowed Chair in Integrative Medicine and the Executive Director of the Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she is a professor of medicine, family medicine, and public health, and an internationally recognized leader in integrative health and is committed to health promotion and pioneering change efforts that solve America's healthcare system problems. She's the editor of the Oxford University textbook, Women's Integrative Health, and the author of Be Fruitful, the Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. You can learn more about her on her website, victoriamazesmd.com, or follow her on Twitter at vmazes. Dr. Mazes, how are you?
I am doing well. Thank you.
Let's talk before we, in the second segment, we'll get into the latest on the vaccine. But it's kind of interesting, the nutritional scientists writing in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition explored the science behind food addiction and whether ultra-processed foods might be contributing to overeating and obesity. You got to wonder if there is this addiction component to the unhealthy foods that we consume.
Yes, so I think we should talk about that because there is definitely some debate. But I guess I'll start by saying, do you think you have any foods like this? I know for me, barbecued potato chips, they're just dangerous for me. I can't stop with one, two, three. I keep going back to that bag. And so I simply don't buy them.
Yeah, I mean, potato chips are always one of those that I will go to when I have a burger on occasion. But the cookies, the downfall for me, Dr. Mazes.
Yeah, so those are both like really smack in the middle of the category for ultra-processed foods. They're foods that are highly manipulated and often have a lot of additives put in them. They're foods that have a lot of sugar, salt, oil, fat. A lot of times they're manufactured to have crunch. So they're things like sodas and chips, candy, sweetened breakfast cereals, chicken nuggets, hot dogs. I mean, they're things that really seem to be addictive at times.
Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass just popped a cookie in his mouth. Tom, was that an Oreo? was that an Oreo?
This is an Oreo.
Oh,
yes.
My God. Just so appropriate for our conversation with Victoria right now. And then, of course, there's pizza, and then there's other items that, I don't know. I think it's Gerhardt who did a lot of this research, says that the highly processed foods really do share much in common, Dr. Mazes, with addictive substances.
Yes, so it is very interesting. This is research that shows that when you eat some of these foods, they have pleasurable ingredients that are rapidly absorbed into the bloodstream and can lead to certain pleasure centers of the brain to light up. And these are the same centers that light up with things like reward, motivation. They cause our brains to secrete more dopamine. This is exactly what happens when you're addicted to cigarettes or cocaine or other kinds of substances. The same area in the brain lights up.
There are healthy ways to, let's put it this way. Mm-hmm. Are there healthy ways to eat traditionally unhealthy foods?
Well, that's a very good question. The idea behind addictive behavior is that you have an unhealthy relationship. And so even though you notice, for example, you're gaining weight or you have diabetes, and these foods are detrimental, you have heart disease, you know they're not good for you, you still seem to be unable to quit. And that's kind of the definition of an addiction, that despite knowing that this is problematic for you, you continue to eat it. Now, some people have this kind of addictive relationship to foods, and other people don't. You know, they could eat even a whole bag of chips one time and then walk away from it, or they could eat just a few chips and walk away from it, but they don't have this ongoing problematic relationship.
There are many foods that are found in nature that are rich in either fat or carbs, but typically they are not high in both. Is that correct?
That is correct. And so, you know, think about some of the delicious things in nature, like a fresh strawberry ripe off the vine, or a peach ripe off the tree, or a, you know, really delicious tomato. You're going to see carbohydrates, or you're going to see an avocado high in fat, delicious, but you're typically not going to see both. And so these foods have actually been created by the food manufacturing companies to make you really want to eat them. You know, they're working on the texture, the mouthfeel. They're masking perhaps a bitter property. They are constructing the food in such a way that they're altering people's response to these foods. And that is, you know, one of the problems. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there is the and this article in that particular journal I cited, it was not a one-way street. One doctor disputes the whole notion that any food is addictive.
That's right. And so this is still a debated area about does food addiction exist? But to me, rather than whether or not it exists, I think most of us have sometimes had the experience of you know, continuing to reach for something even when we're full, even when we don't need more food to nourish our body. And so are we having an issue with overeating? And there is actually an Overeaters Anonymous, just like there's an Alcoholics Anonymous, and they have some great questions. Do I eat when I'm not hungry? Do I go on eating binges for no apparent reason, sometimes eating until I'm stuffed or even feel sick? Do I feel like guilt, shame, or embarrassment about my weight or the way I eat? And so if you're worried that this has really gotten out of control for you, you may find some valuable assistance by taking a look at OA.
And then there's the whole, there's cravings. We all have food cravings. I know I do. In a few moments, Dr. Mazes, I'll be talking about Mona's Danish Bakery and my recent craving for their cinnamon rolls. But that's coming up in a few moments. But cravings is different from addiction, isn't it?
It's absolutely different. I mean, sometimes you know you're going to a relative who prepares one of your favorite dishes.
Yeah.
Pregnant women have cravings. I mean, no, I don't think a craving is the same as an addiction. And as I was preparing to be on your show, one of the things I came across was a wonderful article about a Japanese concept. And I'm going to try to say the Japanese, which I'm not fluent in, but it is kuchisabishi. And that word, it's such a lovely word. It means lonely mouth, literally.
Lonely mouth.
The idea, exactly, of that you might be eating because you're feeling a sense of loneliness. And rather than beating yourself up for overeating or for compulsive overeating, for binge eating or something like that, you know, can you just give yourself a little kindness, a little empathy that your body was asking for something, and just to make it a little gentler on yourself. We're all going through a tough time now with this pandemic and all the restrictions, and food is one of the ways we nourish ourselves.
Can the body be low on a certain mineral or substance that might cause a craving, Dr. Mazes?
Absolutely, and one of the ones we talk about in medicine is a condition actually called pica, where people eat dirt, and they have this craving to eat dirt, and that is because they're deficient in a mineral. So it absolutely can happen, and sometimes you figure out the whys and wherefores of, oh, I was short on a B vitamin or iron, and other times you don't.
All right, Dr. Mazes will stick around, but if you have a craving like I often do for Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, they are open right now for lunch. I have been doing some of the cinnamon rolls lately, just a small portion, not eating the whole thing at one sitting, spreading it out over a couple of days. Yes, that's true. They have some beautiful pastries available for you at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. monasdanishbakery.com is their website. Check it out if you want to call ahead or send them an email that you'll be coming by to pick up your goods, or just walk into the bakery. Of course, you'll need a mask. You can eat in the bakery, some limited dining there, but they've got plenty of room out on the patio as well. Dr. Victoria Mazes continues with her conversation with us on the Buckmaster Show right after this.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We go back now on the live line to our contributor on health, Dr. Victoria Mazes, the Executive Director of the University of Arizona-based Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine, where she is also an endowed chair in integrative medicine. Let's talk a little bit about the good news today. It looks like we're going to get now a third vaccine that will be into the mix, and this will be a one-shot deal, Dr. Mazes.
Yes, this is really good news. This is the vaccine made by Johnson & Johnson, and it's hopeful that it may be available as soon as Saturday. It's not quite as effective as Pfizer and Moderna. It's about 72% overall effective, but it's 86% effective against severe forms. That's the kind that's going to put you in the hospital or, you know, at the worst, die from COVID. So that's getting closer to that 95% from Moderna and Pfizer. But the thing that may appeal to many people besides just one shot is that the side effect profile looks significantly milder than the ones presented by Pfizer and Moderna. There were no reports of severe allergic reactions like anaphylaxis in this trial.
Wow. That is very good news, because some people have been, I think, very hesitant. They've heard about side effects, but I think the side effects are still, I would say, they're not the majority of people. I think we need to emphasize that, correct?
That is correct. And, you know, people talk differently about side effects. Yeah. So anaphylaxis is obviously a very bad side effect. It's very rare. But having an aching arm or having a little bit of fever or some body aches are side effects. But you will hear doctors and scientists say, it's my immune system working. And so it's actually taken as a little bit of reassurance that indeed your body has begun to manufacture antibodies, as opposed to this is a bad thing.
One of the big questions, and we are learning more now because we are, more than 2 months into this since the United States has been vaccinating its population with the two COVID-19 vaccines, the Pfizer and the Moderna. One of the questions has been about the chances of transmitting the virus.
Yes, so this has been this critically important question, which is, if I get vaccinated, could I still have COVID vaccine and could I pass it on to other people, maybe other people in my household, grandchildren, coworkers who have not yet been vaccinated? And everyone's been very hesitant about what the risk of that is. And therefore, the message has been, be sure you continue to wear your mask, to stay distant from others. And that sometimes makes people feel like, well, why should I bother getting vaccinated if I'm not going to be able to change in any way? Mm-hmm. So there's a few things I want to say about that. First, you know, I've been fortunate enough as a physician, I was in the first group to get vaccinated. And I have to say the relief that I won't develop a severe case of COVID, that I am very unlikely now to die from COVID, is really quite a wonderful result of having been vaccinated. But the newest data shows, and this is data from the UK, where they have been studying this, and also from Israel, where they've been studying this. So the newest data shows that the vaccine makes it less likely that you will get any kind of COVID infection. So at first they said maybe you could still have an asymptomatic, because that wasn't tested in the study of Pfizer. But it turns out that Moderna started doing nasal swabs for COVID-19 when people went in for their second shot. And what they found is that it more than halved. There were 14 people in the vaccinated group, so 14 out of 14,000 who had a positive nasal swab, and 38 people out of about 14,000 who were in the control group who had a positive swab. So 14 is less than half of 38. And so that's a very good sign that it actually doesn't just reduce symptomatic COVID, it also reduces the likelihood you'll get it at all.
What does this mean for getting together with friends, for instance, after the friends have both had their shots? In other words, everybody has had their shots at a gathering. What are some of your thoughts about that? This is very, very important.
Well, I think what it means, if you're in a bubble where, you know, you and your wife are both vaccinated and you want to socialize with another couple who have both been vaccinated, you're really quite safe doing that. That is like one of the places that we can open up first. It is a possibility in that situation that maybe one of you could contract COVID, and then the next time you socialize with a child or a grandchild, could you pass it? But not only is it less likely that you'll get an asymptomatic case, there was another study, and this one was out of Israel, that showed that the viral load, the amount of virus in your nose, if you did happen to sneeze or cough, is greatly reduced. And so that makes it less likely that you can infect someone else. So I think we have to start slowly reopening our social lives. And one of the best places would be amongst a small group of people who have all been vaccinated.
What are your thoughts about, there are some people, there's a hardcore group, 1 in 3, it looks like, that are not going to be taking the shot. And I'm just wondering, does that mean we have less of a chance of the so-called herd immunity? Some of your thoughts on that.
So I prefer to use the language vaccine confidence. Like, okay, how confident are people? And people are calling questions into the science. Well, these scientific studies of Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, these studies were done really, really well. And now they've not only been through the initial 30 to 40,000 person trial, but as you could hear, we're getting this additional data. So the study I mentioned where Moderna shared the data from the nasal swabs, that was a supplement to the FDA that is further reassurance. So the further study that's being done is really encouraging. And so I would argue that the science has been well done. And now it's not just been tested on 100,000 people or so. It's been tested on 63 million people in America who have already gotten vaccinated. And you see very low risk associated with getting vaccinated. Then there are people who are concerned because they have low trust of the healthcare system, of medicine, of doctors. And some of that comes from historical incidents that are things that we actually have good reason to be ashamed of in our country. And that's going to take time. It's going to take time to have people develop additional trust. It's going to take conversation, asking people who might they trust. For example, I heard a speaker say, I want to see Barack Obama take the vaccine, and that will make me more comfortable. Hmm. You know, for a lot of people, it was Tony Fauci. When Fauci gets vaccinated, which he has been, yes, then I'll take the vaccine. So it's good to ask people the question of what data would you need to see to begin to feel comfortable? And then your last question about when do we get to herd immunity? Nobody knows for sure. This is still one of those things that is still, we're speculating. We don't know if we need 70%, 80%. It is a combination of people who have had the virus and therefore have natural immunity, plus the people who are getting vaccinated. Often left out of the formula are kids. Kids under 16 cannot be vaccinated, but they're a significant percentage of our population. So I think there's a lot of questions that still have to be answered about that magic goal of herd immunity. However, the numbers are declining, and that is so wonderful. We're finally seeing the numbers start to drop off.
Yeah, and speaking of numbers, only a few seconds left, but it is worth noting we're at the end of February, and this will be historically one of the lowest influenza seasons on record in North America.
It's a good example that masks work, because our masking, our distancing, our hand washing, these public health measures are not just reducing COVID, they are also reducing transmission of the flu.
All right, Dr. Mazes, all the best to you and the team over at the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Stay healthy.
Thank you very much. Dr. Victoria Mazes, we're always delighted to have her. She's one of our contributors. She contributes on health, one of two dozen people that we're delighted to have as part of our team at Buckmaster Show. You can learn more about Dr. Mazes. Her website is Victoria Mazes, MAIZESMD.com, or you can follow her at V Mazes. Coming up next, we're going to get the latest from Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, the superintendent of Tucson Unified. He'll be with us on the live line, hopefully momentarily. But first, we've got a CBS Network news break, and then the Buckmaster Show sponsors. Then back with Dr. Trujillo.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD. Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at NobleHopsPub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. One of the wonderful things about Green Things, they employ people that really know what they're talking about when it comes to gardening and plants. The 13-acre site full of amazing plants, but perhaps you're thinking, you know, I really want some spring color out in the garden. I have no idea what would do well. Well, the experts at Green Things are going to take care of you and guide you in the right direction so you bring home plants that are going to survive in our desert climate, and they're going to thrive, and they're going to be beautiful. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Their website, greenthingsaz.com. They're open daily, and of course, stop by Zocalo Village for all their great handmade, much of it handmade furniture there on the Green Things site. Their website, zocalovillage.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. The superintendent of Tucson Unified, which serves about 40,000 students here in Southern Arizona, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, with us. Dr. Trujillo, how is your day going? I bet it's a busy one as usual.
It is extremely busy, but it is an always wonderful day when I'm able to make my return to the Bill Buckmaster Show. So very, very happy to be here.
Well, thank you very much. And speaking of returns, what is the very latest on putting students back in the classroom?
Well, we have identified the week of March 22nd for an all-district return. And our elementary schools will be returning on Tuesday, March 23rd. We're offering two options, Bill. We're offering parents the opportunity to just send their kids back full-time, 5 days a week, full school days, or to choose to be 100% remote. So we're very, very excited to do that. That's what the parents have asked for. At the high school level, just because of the size of the schools and the middle school level, we're able to offer four half-days a week for all of our high school students and our middle school kids, 6th through 12th grade, where they'll get to be with their teachers physically in person 4 days a week. Wednesdays will be remote, or parents can choose to have their kids 100% fully remote. And we're excited. We just reached an agreement with our Teachers Association and our Site Administrators Employee Association to be able to allow campus principals and teachers the flexibility to teach students that are both in their classroom and remotely at the same time, which that eliminates the need to change any student schedules. So that's big news.
That is. That just came down. And what about the breakdown percentage-wise? I know you have done a lot of talking with parents. So what does it look like? How is it going to break down the percentages?
That's a great question, Bill. So right now, it's running neck and neck. We have 30% of the district's respondents making the selection to remain remote. We have 29% that have made the decision to come back on campus. We're still waiting on 41% of the district to respond. And of course, that window for parents to get into our online registration system to make their selection, that's open through March 7th. So we still have quite a ways to go. I'm pretty confident that we will get everybody taken care of by the time that the window closes on March 7th.
We had a Facebook friend ask me to ask you, Dr. Trujillo, why parents, this is a quote from Jennifer, she said, why parents are barely being told that classroom sizes could have up to 30 students in them, which pretty much scratches social distancing. Your reaction to Jennifer?
Well, I think there's a lot of confusion out there. We have not, at this point, established a classroom size. And we've done that for very, very particular reasons. So just because we have not established a classroom size doesn't mean there's going to be 30 or 35 kids in a room. And what's happening is that parents and teachers are making the assumption that it's going to be 35 kids in a room. We've never come out and said that. And the reason why is because we want to get all of our data in. We have to see where the parents' instructional preferences end up before we start taking a look at what class sizes will be. The class sizes are not going to be 10, which I think is ideal in this situation. But I can tell you what, Bill, they're also not going to be 30. Mm-hmm. They're going to be somewhere in between. And we, in order to get to that number, we have to get all of our parents to make their instructional selection. And as I said, that's open till March 7th. Now, if the current trend holds true and we become a 50-50 district, which is kind of what it's looking like, with 59% of the district reporting, 50% of our families pretty much saying that they want to remain remote, and 50% of our families saying that they do want to come back, we're probably looking at class sizes of around 15. But again, that is something that we need to get all of our data in. And it's also a discussion we want to have with our employee associations, namely TEA, who represents our teachers, and of course, ELI, Educational Leaders Incorporated. They represent the principals and the site administrative team. So that's the next step. So if you're listening, I understand there's a lot of frustration, because here's what happens, Bill. If our team jumps out and talks about class sizes too early before the data comes in, it creates more frustration. If we commit to something like 12 and the data comes back and says that we actually need 16, it's much more difficult to backtrack. If we come out with a class size that's too high and say everybody's going to have, 21 or 20 kids in a room, then we freak everybody out if the data comes back lower. So I know it's frustrating, and I know that teachers want an answer and parents want an answer. We're doing less damage and causing less anxiety by just waiting for the data to come in. That way we're making decisions with fidelity that aren't going to cause any further disruption. So I do know it's a frustrating issue, the topic of class sizes. But I do want to thank Jennifer for bringing that up. It's a kind of an opportunity to clear up some misconceptions out there.
Now, when school opens, will these be full-service campuses with bus service, food catering and services as well?
Yes, we will be offering transportation and food service to all of our students that have traditionally qualified for those services. We have strong mitigation efforts in our cafeterias. We have strong mitigation efforts on our buses. We've reduced routes. We've reduced seating to just two kids per bus seat, so we've had to almost double our routes. It's become quite expensive, as you can imagine. Just another part of this COVID operation that's created additional expenditures. We're installing touchless, hands-free water filling stations that have replaced the district's drinking fountains in all of our schools. So we feel really, really good about the mitigation efforts with regard to COVID-19 protocol once we reopen.
So athletics will be also part of the mix?
Yes, we've already approved, of course, winter sports have been approved. We have a great modified winter sports program that's been working really, really well. We are going to allow for parental attendance of senior nights. Right now, we've been attendance-free, kind of like the major sports leagues, where our games and our competitions have been live-streamed, through a program called NFHS High School Sports Network Live Streaming. A great plug for them, by the way. They're doing a great job for us. But we also understand that seniors and their parents deserve that final special moment. So I know that all of our high schools are planning those final senior nights, especially for basketball and soccer. So we wanted to make sure that on those nights, we did allow for public attendance, specifically for the parents. We have already greenlit transportation. The first part of the pandemic, we were not offering district transportation to our sports teams for away games. And now we are. We want to meet that need of the parents. We understand what a burden it's been, and I thank them for that. But I do think that we're now in a place where we're comfortable resuming transportation services.
All right, Dr. Trujillo, stay with us. We're going to take a break here on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo answering some questions as we get closer now to school resuming in an in-person setting at Tucson Unified. Be right back.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We are all itching to travel. I think the majority of us are. We've been pretty much, a lot of us, cooped up for going on a full year now. And Southwest New Mexico is a place you will want to put on your calendar for 2021 when things open up a little bit more. Over in the Land of Enchantment, 3-hour drive to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And it will be good to get out in the Gila National Wilderness and just get away from it all. For more on things to do and places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our conversation with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, who is the superintendent at Tucson Unified. Dr. Trujillo, so many educators have gotten vaccinated. I'm just wondering if you have had now the full set of the two shots.
Well, myself personally, no. I've only had one. Mm-hmm. So I am due later on here, coming up before March, to get my second and final shot. So luckily there was no side effects or anything. We're doing everything we can inside of the district to encourage as many of our employees to get to take the vaccine as possible. Of course, like many organizations, we're not obligating or mandating our employees to do so, but we are encouraging them.
Now, of the around 8,000 employees in the district, I know you are trying to compile a percent that have had the shot. At this point, you really don't have that information?
Not yet. We have put together a voluntary employee survey that's going to go out Monday morning. We opted to wait till March 1 just because we knew that there had been some hiccups with vaccine distribution and appointments. And so when we set out on the idea of creating an internal survey that's going to help our governing board get a better read on the extent to which the workforce of TUSD has had an opportunity to be vaccinated, we felt that later was a little better, because by March 1, obviously heading into March 1, I think the Pima County Health Department has kind of recovered from the stutter step due to the winter weather. I know that delayed vaccines have arrived in Tucson. Appointments are being made up. So I think we're going to be in a better position. That's going to go out on March 1st, and it's totally voluntary. Like any organization, we can't require any of the employees to share any of their health-related information. That also means vaccines. But the survey is going to tell us, for those that answer, how many have successfully had one vaccine shot, have had both, are planning to get both, or simply are declining for whatever reason. So I think that'll put us in a really, really good spot to assess the extent to which vaccines have been available to TUSD employees.
We have a caller, Matthew, who would like to chat with you. Matthew is on our live line. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, Superintendent, do we know how many people so far, either associated by either being employed by TUSD or possibly even family members, possibly of children who've had any COVID-related positivity rates?
You know, we don't have that number like readily available. We're working off of the Pima County Health Department dashboard. We don't get data on our employees that get or contract the virus out in the community off of the job. So that's the most difficult piece of information for us to actually get. We only have control and access to data to the employees that contract the virus on our campus. And we know that that number is a little lower. We've had around 150 since the beginning of July. We've had around 150 instances of employees that have tested positive for COVID-19 and have filed claims with our insurance carrier. And because we do get that information as part of our agreement with our medical provider. So we are able to get reports, but that doesn't capture the amount of the total amount of employees like Matthew's asking for that don't necessarily file any kind of an insurance claim, meaning they haven't had to go to urgent care, they haven't had to make a doctor's appointment, they haven't had to go to the emergency room. So I want to acknowledge that the number is definitely much larger than just 150. That's only those that we know have reported some sort of a claim to get some assistance from their insurance.
Now let's talk about the money picture, which compared to a month ago, Dr. Trujillo, this is a bright light compared to where we were.
Absolutely. The district was recently awarded $76 million in a second round of CARES money coming from the CARES Act. And there's a couple of really important pieces of information and messaging I want to make sure that I use this platform to get out. These dollars are specifically earmarked for a couple of key areas. First and foremost, they're for COVID-19 related expenditures, personal protective equipment, testing, any vaccine related expenses that we may incur, the ability to offer COVID-19 leave time to our employees, plexiglass, COVID-19 related safety protocols that we're going to have to spend money for, cleaning materials, additional custodial, you name it, that's what it's for. It's for technology related to remote learning. We do believe that online learning is here to stay, and we want to continue that journey of being the best that we can be at remote learning. We know that when we open in the fall, we have every intention of opening regular style, 5 days a week, five school days, five full days every school. But we also understand that parents are permanently scarred from this pandemic and may no longer feel comfortable having their kids physically back in school. So we're going to continue to offer the remote only option. We are projecting that it could probably be anywhere between 5 and 10% of the TUSD student body that probably will remain online even as we come back in the fall. And I think it's also an important point to make that though we have the intention of opening up 5 days and offering a full school week at every one of our schools, this virus acts in really unpredictable ways. So we don't know what the future holds. I'm optimistic. I'm a glass is half full kind of a guy. But could the South African variant blaze a trail of destruction across Arizona? We don't know. So we also have to be nimble enough to react to the changing winds of this pandemic. But online learning is definitely something that's, I think, going to be a part of our landscape going forward.
I think it's important to talk about the chronology here with school going opening up again. In, I think you said, what, end of March, last week of March? So,
that's right.
So what about graduation? What's the school calendar look like?
Well, tentatively, we are looking at the goal is to offer in-person graduations. That is our goal. That's our goal every year, and that's no different this year. The only difference is those graduation ceremonies, they may be pushed back a little bit. We're looking at trying to push them past Memorial Day and probably into June. This is going to be wholly dependent on where the city and the county are at with current mandates. We right now have a current mandate from as a result of the governor's executive order to limit gatherings to 50 or less out in the community. So as long as that's in play, it's going to be very difficult to pull off a large scale type of graduation, but there's a lot of time between now and May. So I think we've got some room. We've got some time on that. We want to see what the city does with regard to public gatherings. We want to see what the county does also with public gatherings.
Is there money to supply the teachers with a particular, I think it's called the N95 mask?
Yeah, we've ordered 50,000 N95
wow.
masks. So yeah, we're serious about providing that resource to the teachers, and not just the teachers, but there's a variety of our employees that work one-on-one with students in intimate settings. Teachers, number one, in the classroom, bus drivers, on our buses, our food service employees, having very close interactions with students, contact with students. These are three really key groups that we're counselors with students in and out of their offices, and when they go into classrooms, paraprofessionals, teaching assistants, subs, all of these employees, we want to make these N95 masks fully available to them. We've also ordered 10,000 reusable translucent, transparent face shields, clear, that employees can also use in addition to these masks. And that's what these CARES Act dollars are for. And that's kind of what I was talking about. That's the main purpose. The other main purpose is that we can use the $76 million for academic recovery efforts.
Okay.
And now for the first time,
real quickly,
spend CARES Act dollars on like summer school and extended learning.
All right, we're out of time. Dr. Trujillo, I know you've got a 1 o'clock meeting. We're going to let you go. We're out of time. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Stay safe, stay healthy.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, superintendent at Tucson Unified. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with Tom Fairbanks. We wish you very well this afternoon and evening, and we've got Dave Ramsey next. Have a great afternoon, everybody.